When any of the editors finally staggered in from lunch, they would exclaim, "What is this feeble crap that X," where X was the name of the field researcher in question, "has sent us from halfway across the bloody galaxy? What's the point of having somebody spending three whole orbital periods out in the bloody Gakrakaka mine zones with all that stuff going on out there if this load of anemic squitter is the best he can be bothered to send us? Disallow his expenses." "What should we do with the copy?" the secretary would ask. "Ah, put it out over the network. Got to have something going out there. I've got a headache. I'm going home." So the edited copy would go for one last slash and burn through the legal department and then be sent back down here, where it would be broadcast out over the sub-ethernet for instantaneous retrieval anywhere in the galaxy. That was handled by equipment which was monitored and controlled by the terminals on the right-hand side of the room. Meanwhile, the order to disallow the researcher's expenses was relayed down to the computer terminal stuck off in the right-hand corner, and it was to this terminal that Ford Prefect now swiftly made his way. If you are reading this on planet Earth, then A, good luck to you. There is an awful lot of stuff you don't know anything about, but you are not alone in this. It's just that in your case, the consequences of not knowing any of this stuff are particularly terrible, but then, hey, that's just the way the cookie gets completely stomped on and obliterated. B, don't imagine you know what a computer terminal is. A computer terminal is not some clunky old television with a typewriter in front of it. It is an interface where the mind and body can connect with the universe and move bits of it about. Ford hurried over to the terminal, sat in front of it, and quickly dipped himself into its universe. It wasn't the normal universe he knew. It was a universe of densely enfolded worlds, of wild topographies, towering mountain peaks, heart-stopping ravines, of moons shattering off into seahorses, hurtful blurting crevices, silently heaving oceans and bottomless hurtling hooping funts. He held still to get his bearings. He controlled his breathing, closed his eyes, and looked again. So this was where accountants spent their time. There was clearly more to them than met the eye. He didn't know his way around this universe. He didn't even know the physical laws that determined its dimensional extents or behaviours, but his instinct told him to look for the most outstanding feature he could detect and make towards it. Way off in some indistinguishable distance, was it a mile or a million or a mote in his eye, was a stunning peak that overarched the sky, climbed and climbed and spread out in flowering aigrettes, an ornamental tuft of plumes, agglomerates, a jumbled mass, and archimandrites, a cleric ranking below a bishop. He weltered towards it, hooling and thirling, and at last reached it in a meaningless long umpthinth of time. He clung to it, arms outspread, gripping tightly onto its roughly gnarled and pitted surface. Once he was certain that he was secure, he made the hideous mistake of looking down. While he had been weltering, hooling and thirling, the distance beneath him had not bothered him unduly, but now that he was gripping, the distance made his heart wilt and his brain bend. His fingers were white with pain and tension. His teeth were grinding and twisting against each other beyond his control. His eyes turned inwards with waves from the willowing extremities of nausea. With an immense effort of will and faith, he simply let go and pushed. He felt himself float. Away. And then, counterintuitively, upwards. And upwards. He threw his shoulders back, let his arms drop, gazed upwards and let himself be drawn loosely, higher and higher. Before long, insofar as such terms had any meaning in this virtual universe, a ledge loomed up ahead of him on which he could grip and onto which he could clamber. He rose, he gripped, he clambered. He panted a little. This was all a little stressful. He held tightly onto the ledge as he sat. He wasn't certain if this was to prevent himself from falling down off it or rising up from it, but he needed something to grip onto as he surveyed the world in which he found himself. He slowly brought his breathing back under control again. He told himself repeatedly that he was just in a graphic representation of a world, a virtual universe, a simulated reality. He could snap back out of it at any moment. He snapped back out of it. He was sitting in a blue leatherette foam-filled swivel-seated office chair in front of a computer terminal. He relaxed. He was clinging to the face of an impossibly high peak perched on a narrow ledge above a drop of brain-swivelling dimensions. It wasn't just the landscape being so far beneath him. He wished it would stop undulating and waving. He had to get a grip. Not on the rock wall, that was an illusion. He had to get a grip on the situation, be able to look at the physical world he was in while drawing himself out of it emotionally. He clenched inwardly, and then, just as he had let go of the rock face itself, he let go of the idea of the rock face and let himself just sit there clearly and freely. He looked out at the world. He was breathing well. He was cool. He was in charge again. He was in a four-dimensional topological model of the guide's financial systems, and somebody or something would very shortly want to know why. And here they came. Swooping through virtual space towards him came a small flock of mean and steely-eyed creatures with pointy little heads, pencil moustaches, and querulous demands as to who he was, what he was doing there, what his authorization was, what the authorization of his authorizing agent was, what his inside leg measurement was, and so on. Laser light flickered all over him as if he was a packet of biscuits at a supermarket checkout. The heavier-duty laser guns were held, for the moment, in reserve. The fact that all of this was happening in virtual space made no difference. Being virtually killed by a virtual laser in virtual space is just as effective as the real thing, because you are as dead as you think you are. The laser readers were becoming very agitated as they flickered over his fingerprints, his retina, and the follicle pattern where his hairline was receding. They didn't like what they were finding at all. The chattering and screeching of highly personal and insolent questions was rising in pitch. A little surgical steel scraper was reaching out towards the skin at the nape of his neck when Ford, holding his breath and praying very slightly, pulled Van Hall's Identities out of his pocket and waved it in front of them. Instantly, every laser was diverted to the little card and swept backwards and forwards over it, and in it, examining and reading every molecule. Then, just as suddenly, they stopped. The entire flock of little virtual inspectors snapped to attention. "Nice to see you, Mr. Hall," they said in smarmy unison. "Is there anything we can do for you?" Ford smiled a slow and vicious smile. "Do you know," he said, "I rather think there is."